Since I used the word feminism, I think I'll tell you what I think a feminist is. Someone who's a stout champion of the rights of women. And I didn't say which sex that person was, and I didn't say what that, you know, I just think that's enough. I think that's kind of broad and probably adequate. And I'm calling them working papers because we're all creating our lives every day. We're not any of us finished growing, I suspect. So that's the kind of notion behind this. My life is in process, and we all help one another with the process of our lives. And I think Holden is particularly good at helping us with our own lives, helping us with the processes in all of our lives, because it's a tough world out there. Things are changing, there are different influences, there are different norms. And it's not clear, it's not, I can't live my life just like my mother did or her mother did. Even though both of those women, I would have loved to live their lives. They were both terrific women that I admire and respect and love, but I just couldn't do their life, and they couldn't do their life over again now the same way. Then I wanted to mention, of course, that I'm not a theologian, and the Bible says many things about women and men and the roles between them, but there are biblical imperatives for growth and for not keeping our light under a bushel and for not burying our gifts, but for nourishing them and letting them grow and flower and get bigger. And I think that applies to all of us as men and women, that we all feel that injunction that we should grow as Christians. And that's part of what is the underpinning for our lives, and I think that's important to remember in this kind of a context. Then I would like to say that if you're interested in issues of a two-career family, for me, the underlying principle has to be egalitarian, that it has to be a kind of balance or fairness. And I'm not saying how that works out either. But I think if you're not both committed to that, and I really think both of you have to be committed to that, I don't think both of you have to know how to do that, but I think you need to be committed to the idea that a relationship should be sort of fair in some fundamental way, then I think the process becomes fun and is something that you can work out over time. And the definitions of the process change as time goes by. We all would like to root out, and without blame, I think, root out parts of our socialization that we don't like or affirm. I'm socialized in certain ways by this world that I live in, by the TV set that I listen to, by the stuff in stores that I see, by everything that, you know, we're all socialized, you know what that means. So I want to choose among the things that I'm socialized to do, and I want to root out the ones I don't like. I don't want to just take everything that's pumped into me by my society, but I want to have a choice about those things. So we have a commitment to the process of organizing our lives in a way that we believe in and in a way that we feel proud of, that we feel happy about. And that kind of takes you back a step that says, my life is going to be something that I'm going to choose some things in and not just going to take the givens. Then I should mention that this issue of two career families is class-based. Obviously, if you can't find work, then you can't have careers. If you're poor, you don't talk in terms of careers. You talk in terms of getting by. If one of you can't find work and the other one can, the kinds of tensions that induces and the kinds of decisions you have to make are completely different. I think for working class and middle class families, these issues are important to think about and are relevant, but I think they're not terribly relevant for probably rich people, although I don't know, and certainly not for very poor people. It's just the way life is. A lot of people work to stay out of poverty. Both sides of a couple work to raise that family out of poverty. And I think for those kinds of families, these are relevant issues. The biggest complication in the whole shooting match, of course, is kids. And I'm going to talk about kids on Friday. So, speaking of which, yeah. Because it's so much a complication in this that it is a separate session. But I have to say that the ideas I'm going to mention and sort of run past you and get your reaction to work well when kids come into the family. It sets you up well for having kids. It makes space in your family for children more hospitable, makes it better for you. So I'm not saying that this is wrong if you have kids. I'm just saying that I'm not going to unpack what it would mean to have children today in this system, but that I think the system works for that. In my family, this is a kind of system that we struggle with, and kids came into it pretty well and pretty peaceably, and one of them was handicapped and had extra needs. And even that kind of stress was open to this kind of process that I'm going to talk about. So I'm in favor of kids, and I love kids, and I am worried about children in our society today because I don't like to see children in child care all the time when they're really little. But that is a separate issue that I would like to postpone mainly until Friday. The consequences of this without children are things like a messier house. You know, you can live with a messier house. You can make that choice as one of the ingredients in your life. Or the consequences are choosing to do less volunteer work. So the sense in which my answer is no, you can't do as many things for your church if you are a two-career family. You can't do as many things for the public library in your town. Or you can't work in a political campaign as freely. There are many things you can't do if you're both at work a lot. But the children's side of that is a separate and much more complicated issue. There's a song, an old song by Charlie King, that a singing group that's political called the Bright Morning Star sings, which is a lovely song. It's called, I don't know what it's called, but the main phrase of it, or the chorus of it is, but our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. So if you back that up, you would see that life is everything that life is, including time to sit and read poetry, and time to contemplate, and time to do athletics, and then that is more than our work, obviously. But our work is not just our job. It's not just what we do to earn a living. Our work in life as Christians is to serve other people, as well as to maintain our own family, our own life, our own needs. Our work is to make the world a better place. You want to leave it a better place than you came into it. Or however you talk about your work or think about it. Work is serious contribution, work, something. It doesn't have to be serious, it can be fun. But it's more than just your job. So I want to include all of those things in this kind of schema that I'm going to set up, that's kind of a simple method for solving problems. At Lutheran Women's Stuff, we've sometimes sung that song, and it's always been helpful to us in terms of thinking about our lives. So then the nitty-gritty, but a reminder, the personal is political, life is more than work, which is more than job, and you both have to want to do this for it to work. You don't have to know how, but you have to want to do it. Then I would say that a simple method for working out how to have a two-career family is some variation on this kind of scheme. You have to list everything. You don't have to list them on lists, but you have to list everything that you're conscious of as time-consuming parts of your life. Maybe you don't need to write it down, maybe you can just talk it out. You can say, these are the kinds of work that we have to do together to get our life accomplished happily. And that includes, I took 5 minutes and made this many words thinking about it. For example, shopping. You have to shop for groceries, clothes, you have to shop for insurance policies. for household items. You have to shop for furniture. You have to shop for cars. You have to even shop for vacations. Shopping, you know, that's something that you have a visceral reaction to. You like it or you hate it or whatever, but it takes time, and it is work. If somebody didn't shop, I one time said to a friend of mine, if I get run over by a truck tomorrow, my husband is suddenly going to realize how valuable I am as a shopper. Because I look for the bargains and I shop secondhand stores and, you know, we work hard at shopping and it is something that is often made fun of in our society, but it takes time and it is work. If you do it well, you're proud of yourself and you feel good about it. Our furniture is all secondhand because we want to live at a low level of consumption. We don't want to waltz into Marshall Field's and say, I'd like one of those, but instead to live cheaper and lower on the food chain and think more simply. And we give away whatever money we can to what we think are important things to support. So shopping is an important element in our family's ability to make that choice. Appointments. You have to make appointments. You have to think about, let's see, is it time for the family's dentist appointments? Someone has to bear in mind the overall scheme of things, the timetable. You have to make an appointment to see the plumber. You have to see, you know, whatever kinds of appointments go on in your lives. Someone has to handle a social calendar. You can't live as isolates. You can't choose not to have friends. If you have friends, friends are like gardens. They need tending. So you need to plan to see your friends and to spend some time. If a friend is having an unhappy time, you have to devote more time to that. So all of those kind of things are time-consuming, and someone has to make the plans. Someone has to pick up the telephone, or if you're at Holden, you have to walk next door. Some of us come to Holden just so we don't have telephones. Someone has to do the extra preparation for guests if you're going to be hosting people, being in your home. Someone has to do some worrying, I think. You have to sort of fret about things some in order to figure out the right solutions and figure out what really makes sense, especially in terms of family relations. If there's a rift at the Thanksgiving table among two aunts, you know, someone's got to get them back together again. And that's the kind of thing that you have to fret over a little bit. And of course, partners are better at that. You can talk, the two of you, about it, but it takes time. You get the idea that I think the work in our lives is more than cooking and cleaning and doing the laundry. It's simple to say, you cook and I'll clean, or something like that, but life is much more complex than that. there's the business of repair, especially if you don't want to buy new. You have to repair clothes, you have to repair furniture, you have to repair a broken switch in the house, you have to repair stuff, or hire someone to repair, or learn to repair, all of which is very time consuming. The car, repairing the car and tending to the needs of the car and remembering when it's time to bring it in for its annual rust inspection, if you have rust proofing on your car. you get the idea. And it's really to bring to consciousness stuff that you feel takes your time and weighs on you as a member of that family. And so the list is evolving, modifying, changing all the time because there are new things that come up. Obviously, when children come, that's like, go buy some new tablets because this is going to be hard. There's going to be a lot of things to write down. But bringing all that stuff to consciousness, even planning devotions, thinking about the worship life of the family, thinking about your relationship with your church, all of that has to be treated as something that we're grateful that someone in our family system does. There are many pitfalls in this. One of them is the pitfall, oh, I'm better at it, I'll just do it. And it doesn't work. If you're doing too many things already, then you shouldn't just do it. I have learned long ago that my inability to do certain things relieves me from the necessity of doing them. And I think that's pretty sneaky. I think the fact that I hide the fact that I know how to type at the office is probably kind of sneaky on my part, but I'm not going to tell the office that I know how to type, because I always get a wonderful secretary who can type for me. But it's the same thing at home. If somebody says, oh, I don't know how to clean toilets, then... Yes, right, there you go. I do have a crash course for you. Or, I don't know how to cook, you know, and you're a much better cook, and you think about nutrition and balanced diets and good food for us and keeping us healthy. You can make the choice to say that that is one person's job, and that's fine. In our family, we've done that, and we do designate certain areas of expertise. But I don't think you should let that area of expertise be designated simply because one person comes into the marriage knowing how to do it and the other one doesn't. I think there are other kinds of considerations in terms of balance and role models for children and schedules, just simply schedules. One of you gets home from work at 4:30 and the other one gets home at 6. Who should make the dinner? Probably the person who gets home at 4:30. So I just don't think we should let those things be dictated to us by a society that says women cook. Chefs cook, of course, and chefs are men. We all know that. But they're fancy cooks or experts or professional. That's the word, professional. So, you know, just to step back one step from all the kind of presuppositions about who's good at what. I'm much better at repairing things than my husband, for example. If you ask him to repair something, he'll just look at you blankly. He wouldn't even understand the concept. And he doesn't have a mind that thinks well about repairing things. Whereas I enjoy it and enjoy the challenge, and I like looking inside my refrigerator. Refrigerators are hopeless these days, you can't repair them, but repairing whatever, the vacuum cleaner. Sometimes I need his strength, so I come and say, do not ask any questions, just use your brute strength to move this to the, you know. He says fine, and he does it, you know. So question authority, question the authority of the culture to say to you, you have to do things a certain way, and also respect the work. The work is hard, the work is time consuming, but the work is also fun, and it's fun to do it together, and it's fun to learn to do new things, and we can all grow and change this way. So if you bring it to consciousness and give it some respect, then you can put it into the balance of things. Then I think a very important thing to do is to make joint decisions about the expenditures of the family. And the expenditures of family, I don't just mean money. I think it's important to decide if you're going to give money away to support a cause or to support something or other, you should make that decision together, unless it's $5 or something. Or if you're going to make a major purchase, obviously you should think that through together and figure out whether you can do it and how you can do it and what are your values and what are your needs for it. But my main concern here is the expenditure of time. And I don't think that we're alone in being very caught up in the need for time. Time is a real valuable commodity in our lives. We run on clocks and schedules and our lives are busy and our calendars are full. We partly come to Holden to get away from that, and then once you start working at Holden, let me tell you, you don't get away from it. You're still caught up in the busy life with many things to do. And the more, well, so then I think you have to decide. I want to work on a political campaign. How would that work in our family dynamic this political season? Do I have the support of the family in giving my time to our local aldermanic candidate, or do I have the support of the family to take on teaching adult Sunday school at my church, or do I have the support of the family? Because all of those things are gifts that we give to our world that take away from the family. They may enrich the family at the same time. They probably do enrich us. But they also take just physical presence and time away from the family. And when you enter into a family relationship, I don't think you're any more sort of a free agent that can just say, well, it's my life. I'm going to do what I want. I don't feel comfortable in that kind of a relationship in a family. I think that even if one of you wants to go back to school and get a PhD, that has to be a joint decision, that as a family you support doing that. If one of you wants to rise in your career to the extent that means joining a more high-powered law firm and planning and staying at work until 8 o'clock every night, that sounds to me like a family decision, because obviously it affects a lot of things. It affects the dinner hour, it affects children if there are any, or they wouldn't see you ever probably when they were little because they'd be in bed when you got home. You know, it affects many, many, many things in your life. So, and also if you make a decision not to advance in your firm or to move to a more high-powered law firm and get a higher paycheck and stay at work until 8 o'clock every night, then that decision to earn less money, which I think is a tougher decision to make in our society these days. I think it's hard to say, I choose not to zoom up the career ladder. I choose to spend more time tilling the soil at home. It's a decision that is interesting to make. We've made it several times in our family, and the consequences are partly that people get angry with you. A lot of people don't like it that you would decide to do that, that you would question the value in our society of making more money, of getting more power, of moving ahead, to the extent that you would say, no, I'm not going to make that move now. I'm going to choose a move that cuts back or does less or slows down. But that kind of a choice about expenditure of time and psychic energy is a real serious choice, and I think if you put that into the public arena of the family and you say, let's talk about this, that really helps a lot, because then the level of trust is so good and you feel... For example, I hate working on campaigns. I'm not good at politics and I feel uncomfortable doing it, and my old Norwegian background just totally takes over and I clam up. But I have strong feelings about good candidates. My husband is a natural at politics. He's very good. Before we got married, I made him promise he would never run for public office because I could see the handwriting on the wall. And he doesn't want to run for public office, and I suppose I'd relent if he did. But he does like supporting different campaigns, and he works with Harold Washington in Chicago, and I support Harold Washington. I think Washington's an excellent mayor. I think he has integrity. I think there are lots of good things about him. So Jody and I have made a decision together that Jody will work for Washington as a volunteer. He'll be part of Washington's think tank, and he'll be an advisor, and he'll spend time down there, and that decision is a decision that I support, and I almost feel like I'm doing the work because I'm covering for Jody in some other areas. So it's my work too that he's doing, and I'm grateful to him for doing it because I hate politics. So you can make that kind of a deal, and both of you feel good about it. You don't have to say, even if one of you is writing a dissertation in November and December and the other one says, I'll put Christmas on this year for our family, that seems like a good deal to me. I mean, I'm saying that this is really stuff you can talk about. It's not, there are no right answers. But it makes a lot of difference to open up your life in that way and talk about them. Then the last point I wanted to say is that you should explain when and where you feel ripped off. If you find yourself resenting something that's happening in the family, if you find yourself resenting the fact that you always end up going to all the soccer games, doing the schlepping to and from soccer practice, you know, that's a kid example, but you get the idea. If you find yourself resenting some part of your life, I think it's important for the trust in the family to bring that up. I just think you should say it and then work on a solution. If, for example, you always had come home late for work on Tuesdays, but that's the only day you come home late, and you resent, you drag in, it's your hardest day at work, and you've got to make dinner because it's part of your responsibility, bring that up and say, could you make dinner on Tuesdays? You know, it would really help me a lot, and I'd feel much happier coming home at that point after my hardest day. And that stuff feels terrific once you work it out between you. You feel great about having done that, and you feel like your life is a partnership, which it is. And there are many wonderful things about it being a partnership. including if one person says, you know, I always dreamed that when I got married, my wife would make breakfast for me. And you might say, how about I do it twice a week? You know, you can count on breakfast on Wednesdays and Fridays. You know, or you could work, I mean, there could be some kind of compromise. But, you know, I think it's okay for us to get babied in the ways that we like to get babied. I need strokes, you need strokes. We all need to have certain things about the way we were raised that we think are important to us, that matter. And if we can give each other a real boost by doing those, let's do it. You know, we're here to love each other, let's do it. Well, that's what I wanted to say, and now I'm real interested in what you have to say. So could we get into a discussion? I'm healthy in my ego, so you can disagree with me. It's okay. I think I'm healthy in my ego. If I go crying out of here, you'll find out different. You got any reactions or questions or problems? Yeah?
I may have missed it when I was reading the children's book. And maybe it's obvious it's staring in the eyes, but perhaps you could just tell me what you then feel about two career families. I mean, having said what you've said,
right,
the implication, because I can see some that I've enjoyed what you've said this far, and I really wanted to hear what you said about that.
I said that I thought that we had a biblical imperative to fulfill ourselves and to nourish our talents and to grow and change in ways that we could. I said some families have to have two careers for financial reasons, to stay out of poverty. I didn't actually say that I thought everyone who was interested in doing something in a career should, but I guess I do think that. But the modification I would have to make on that is about children. I don't think women should stay home and tend children, but I think children do better with a parent around. And I also think that you can decide to earn less money for a period of time and have the children be the joy and entertainment in your life, and that it'll pay you well if you do that. So I guess I don't think there's any reason not to have two careers in the long term. I think in our culture, we assume that men start at age five in kindergarten and stay businesslike until they're 65 or 70. Just never deviate. Just get on that ladder and go. You know, and if men do anything to deviate, they are not praised by our culture. They're frowned on. And I think that's pernicious and evil. And I think we should assume that life is full of deviations. You have an aging parent who needs you to come and tend and care for. You have children, you have illness, you have a need to lie fallow for a period of time and nourish your soul, think about things. You need to take some time off to write poetry. Life does not consist of just getting on the ladder at age 5 and going to age 70 and then having a heart attack. No, I think it's much more rich. I think it's a gift that women are assumed to vary and deviate and go like that, and I also think it's a curse, because then women aren't taken seriously as workers, and people won't hire women who are of childbearing age, and people don't, you know, law firms, for you to become a partner, you have to stay late at work, and yet your childcare ends at 5:30, so what are you going to do? And they don't let men have the option of walking out at 5:30 and saying, I have to go pick up the kids, but they expect women to, and then they don't make them partners. And that's just a law firm. I'm picking on law firms, but that's a paradigm for many kinds of professional work. I'm grateful for the fact that I am expected to go like that. And I think my husband is grateful for the fact that we allow him in our family unit to go like that. But I don't like the norms that society lays out. I'm sorry.
I think sometimes men, women who want some security in a marriage also resist allowing men to get off the ladder and to do some different things.
Mm-hmm. And so if you really laid all that on the table from both sides, and figured out the economics of it and really looked at what your lifestyle would be like and decided to live more simply or decided that your savings could take you through this far but no farther, you know, maybe you could overcome that kind of a feeling. At one point, we decided to go back from 2 full-time jobs to 1 and share that one job. And we had to rethink what it would mean to live on half as much money. And we found that it was not a great burden, but that it did take some thought, some planning. Did you have your own?
I have something I can't mention. I can verbalize it very well. In our lives, it seems to me that simply talking about climbing the ladder puts a negative wash on career development pursuit. Mm-hmm. And we both constantly have the feeling that we're bringing in. Neither of us get to really sprint.
Oh, isn't that frustrating? You know?
And so the two careers at what cost? It's like two...
Which is terribly frustrating.
Yeah. Each of us threatened to quit. And then I was like, no, I can never quit.
Yeah. We play chickens. All right, this is bad. Our kid is missing. We've got to change things before it's too late. Who's going to quit? Somebody's got to quit. We never have quite ever, maybe kind of sort of blank and walk away.
We have a feeling, I think, like, two partial careers is better than either of us giving up. But there's a real sense of constant sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a dynamic of...
The money is not... I mean, we'd be happy with less money. Yeah, but if we made less money, it would... especially with you, it would mean not getting to do what you want to do. I mean, in order to do what you want to do, I think...
The other problem with work, with the career and maybe shortchanging the portrait of the career that you painted is that the career itself, for me, and I know for Elaine too, involves a lot of love and trust and respect for the people I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in that together with them too.
Mm-hmm.
And people I've been working with for 2 or 3 years to develop my skills and develop their skills and to work as a team. If I pull out in 2 years, their 10-year plan is in trouble. That's not to say that it's, you know, anyone is indispensable, but at the same time, yeah, it's kind of a commitment, and it's a relationship. I think certainly not all careers, not all jobs in that way, and perhaps no law firms in that way, but I certainly work with people who would be really, really hurt and let down if I pulled out, certainly if I pulled out suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine certainly the same way. So when we rein in, we know that when we're reining in, we know that other people are going to be not seeing their kids as much. Kind of care from us. So it's a very agonizing balance. It's not just a category of, I feel that I should.
But that's not fair. It's not fair to in the business, to say, I'm going to work less, and so you see your kids less. I think the business should decide to shrink if that has, instead of that. You know, that you can't say, I'm going to make you suffer so that I can have a whole life at home. It just doesn't seem...
The business shrinks and the industry shrinks, then people get laid off. Probably won't be me, but other people in my firm, if I'm not up there, you know, hitting on all cylinders and everybody isn't, then, you know, people have to walk.
The issue, though, that we haven't addressed is that the workplace is not user-friendly for two-career families.
That's right.
That there are so many creative things that we could be doing in terms of shared jobs, flex hours, and seasonal work, and all different kinds of things that... Some women have had a chance to do that, at least in Canada, in the educational system, where there's some room there for setting up shared jobs. But otherwise, I'm a pastor, and it is abundantly clear to me that we've developed a church that assumes that there will be someone in the home of the pastor doing all that other stuff.
Oh, true.
And it's
she's a pastor too.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
The expectations that we put on the pastors, and doesn't it have to be
part of this? I mean, the way that we've muddled through our crises, you know, who's gonna pull the trigger? Lots of times. Their horse. We've got to eat. the ways that what's hard to do is to ask. And you're right, it's not user friendly, and maybe it's more apparent than real sometimes. Again, I don't know about law firms, but in my firm, I've found, and maybe it's harder for me to ask, that really, if I can go in and say, look, I can't do this now, I have to do something else, the people I'm working with who are maybe older and have grown wiser since most of the people have had divorces. I've had one or two. They tend to kind of make room. You know, just don't ask, he's got a couple of kids. You know, let's not send them to Salt Lake City.
I think that's true.
But you get a lot of
pressure. I do. That's very hard for me to do, and I think it's harder for me than it is for you.
People expect it of women, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that your point is very good, that we should try to be more creative with our workplaces, though, and like my workplace, when we cut from two jobs to one and shared the one job, was very unhappy with our insurance policy, because you only insure full-time people, and we were actually two in one, or one in two or something. And so we had to really figure that one out. What are we going to do about the insurance policy? And we ended up saying that it was 1 year I was the full-time person, the next year he was the full-time person, and the next year I was, and the next year he was. And then we had to figure out how does that look on our records in terms of future employment, and what is the explanation for our being off every other year, and the fact that he earned a little more at work than I did, so the years that I was a full-time person, we earned less than the year that he was the full-time person. Some people have done extremely creative things just by asking, just by pushing. I think CNA Insurance Company, at least some years ago, did a good shared job professional position. And instead of paying a half-time person one-tenth of the wages of a full-time person, they paid them half of the wages and included some benefits. And then another person would share the other half of that job. And in fact, they found that more work got done than if there were there's just been one person in that job. I might be wrong about CNA, but that sort of sticks in my mind as a company that did that. But other companies, I mean, from time to time you read about companies that are interested in doing that, or flex time, or my dentist works 4 days a week as a dentist and does childcare, and his wife is a midwife, and she does 3 days a week as a midwife and does childcare. And the godfather to one of my children is a lawyer, and he works 4 days a week as a lawyer, and then he spends more time at home, and his wife does the same. I mean, it's possible, but it's hard. It's just very hard, and you have to push hard and think about it and develop a strategy with other employees. But I do think it's important to do that kind of thing, especially for children's sake. And I keep wanting to slide into my Friday thing, but I'm really unhappy about the state of childhood in our country these days. I think when your children are older, it'll be easier, probably. How old are yours? Is it easier yet?
I have a business that's out of my home, and it is easier when our kids are in school full time. I mean, I work full time while they're at school, but summer's here now, and that's been a real difficult time for us to adjust to just, then I'm doing childcare and full time work. And it's hard for me just to justify childcare in the home when I'm home. And that's something we've been working through, trying to figure out how that fits in.
Mm-hmm.
And also then still to feel like I'm giving my kids time and have time just for our family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easier when they're in school.
It's just a hard time, I think, now. I mean, many of us, if we didn't have two jobs in our family, we would really live quite differently. And in a way that we wouldn't want to live. And I mean, I live in a city, and I send my kids to private school, and if I sent them to public school, statistically, every year they were in public school, their light would dim, and I don't want to see their lights dimming. It's too, you know, the schools in my neighborhood are really poor, and so that would be something we would give up, or we would move out of the city. More comments or questions or problems? It seems like it used to be easier to live on one income. I could be wrong about that, but 20 years ago when I started teaching, it didn't seem hard at all. And maybe, I don't know, if the economy has really changed. I don't know anything about the economy. But
don't you think that the expectations of a working couple are much greater than they were a number of years ago? I guess I think of people who are new employees at our company, start out with all of these conveniences and possessions and so forth. You know, they expect it right away, so they, in order to get that, they both got to go get into the workforce. And they're stuck in that after they buy the new car and the house and start making those payments. All of a sudden, they're locked into that thing forever.
Yuppies. Yeah, wasn't there a national article in the last week or two about two career families that were just acquisitive? It was in Time or Newsweek or something that and the article I thought was very critical of people who lived like that because they were so acquisitive and didn't have values outside of themselves. I think that maybe that's right. I don't know. I don't know.
I see a sharp distinction in value systems and lifestyles between people that have kids and people that don't. I mean, we got our banks and we got our whatever we are. and we put our money into our kids and we put our spare time into our kids and we don't refinish antique furniture and we don't buy BMWs and we don't go on vacations to Hawaii. And people that are exactly my age with similar careers and families that don't have kids are living this, you know, bonds away, wine tasting lifestyle. There's not a lot of communication or sympathy or understanding between those two groups of people, I think. And perhaps that's good. I mean, it needs to be okay for people not to have kids. It's not always so okay, and maybe this is just my perspective, for people to have kids.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel uncomfortable with the people that have more disposable income?
Not really. It's just not possible for me to maintain a kind of a social life with them, a relationship outside of work. It's much easier for me to, we don't do much of any tending in the garden of friendships, but the extent that we do is with people that have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't work very well in the long run overall. It's just not a comfortable mix for me to go out with my people who I really like and care for at work and don't have kids.
Does that ring true? Yes.
This is kind of interesting because it's the opposite of my experience. I mean, we're going to have a child now, but we've always lived below taxable income, and a lot of our friends haven't, so we haven't had any money. Whereas a lot of our friends and family who have had kids use that as an excuse to get more money. And they put a lot of their money into their kids, into their house for their kids, or into their car for their kids, and for their kids. And meanwhile, they're not thinking about the rest of the world and other people and other places. And it's really just frustrating for me. And I see people in churches as really, churches are places for people with kids. And some of us without kids have really pushed out by the church because we weren't the family structure.
We had a similar experience, Sarah. We really started to acquire. We acquired a building collectively with some other people, but it was a nice big space as soon as we got kids. We got rid of our old little Volkswagen Bug and got a more stable big car that we could put a safe car chair into as soon as we had kids. And you know, kids were the excuse for needing more money.
I think it's an oversimplification to quickly suppose that the division, and I think it's very real, between couples with children and couples without children, is primarily a matter of acquisitiveness and not. We don't have an enormous amount of disposable income. Somebody looked at our gross combined income, it's pretty good. I have an ex-wife and children who live with my ex-wife. A fair amount of money gets funneled that way and out of those relationships. So we live probably a bit simpler lifestyle than our incomes might appear to be. But I have noticed very much that there's a community of interest of people who have children. It's largely independent of income. And people who don't have children don't have much to talk about with the people who do. And it's not a question of money. It's a question that your interests are focused very, very differently.
And what you, it's not just even that, it's not that your tastes magically change, it's what your ability to keep up with the shifts as well as tastes too. It's also interesting.
If you're a couple without children and you go to dinner with somebody and you're all trying to talk about the neat movies you've seen or what you've seen on television, and what they're really interested in talking about is what's going on with the kids and the issues of that. It's not that each of you doesn't respect what you're doing, it's just that there's not very much overlap.
Or maybe I haven't seen a movie for a year.
That's the only night I've done.
There were some real strong reactions back here to that. Yeah, and that's to their loss.
And the other thing is, usually from a party situation, they bring their children, there's a busy looking at them. Either people are looking at their children being cute, or they're running after them, that takes over the conversation, but they can't have anything else going on.
But she has a lot to be said for adult time, and that is important.
And if couples with kids don't take adult time, and don't think about national and international issues and ideas, they will die in the vine too. I think it's important to, I mean, I hope that your acquaintances in that group and all of us would be aware of that as a pitfall and get on it, get on the case. Kids are pretty overwhelming at the start. I think everyone goes through that, but I think you can get over it.
I think there really is a very charged rift of people that are letting the kids come, especially young kids. And people that know both feeling excluded from some aspect of something that's good in the world and in each other's company. I don't know if that's always been that way or what. I don't have any perspective.
And was there another reaction over here? Or you have one? Okay.
I lived in a house. There were four of us single people and a married couple with one child and another child on the way. And I think for all of us it was a terribly enriching experience that as young people of 26 up to 30, we were actually able to share in the life of a family. It wasn't easy because we actually had to say, 7 o'clock, we home, we want supper. If that child's in here, we'll go mad. Been on the house for 12 hours and I've had children screaming in my ears the whole time, and as you said, it's adult time. It's actually a terribly enriching thing, and I found for myself that there was no way that I would resent those children, and I think there were things that I brought into the house because I was outside the house all day. I was eating all the input that I could bring back in, and it was a very sharing thing, and I feel very positive about it. I don't see that very clear link being drawn between people with children and people without. I think it's a case of actually having to define things and actually find and make sure that you don't each get isolated in different areas.
I think you've suggested a remarkably rich lifestyle there that doesn't fit, and it perhaps suggested of some adjustments that some of the rest of us might look at making. Because that kind of a combination, you know, bridges some of the problems.
I'm looking at the positive side of the knife. I think of a time schedule. it's not so positive. It's very time consuming. And I think it was right for me. I think for a family, it does erode that family structure.
we lose some difficulties with that.
Among friends, it would be terribly important to raise to consciousness all these issues. I remember thinking when our first child was born that we had lost our best friends because our world suddenly seemed so far apart. And then we had to all get together and talk about it and work on it. We really made some conscious effort to work on the friendship. Partly we found that it was a great relief to have adult conversation again, as long as we could keep them posted on every development of our baby. Yeah.
Could I get back in the conversation before we started talking about children? To the question of the workplace and that, because I think the statement that you made that the personal is political is really illustrated in that whole setup, and in the sense that I'm not an American and I've been studying at a graduate school of theology here and realizing how I'm not in debt. I mean, I've had my education cheaply on scholarships and that, but most of those students in graduate programs are $30,000-$40,000 in debt. And that's going to affect the way their careers operate and the kinds of churches they're going to choose and things like that. But that's not just a personal issue, that's a political issue. I mean, this economic system has been set up to push and screw students in that way so that they can't get involved in activist kinds of jobs. They have to get into the system. And it seems to me that perhaps the question one has to raise if your job needs, you know, people like that is really to raise the political questions. Does our job have to be like this or whatever? It seems to me that you've got to also take that critique into the political sphere, because it does intrude.
Yeah, it's hard to do that, but I think it's important to do that. It's one of the reasons that Holden has a hard time getting volunteers, because college students come out of college saddled with enormous debts, or while they're in college, they're accruing huge debts. And then when they're tempted to come here, and they say to their parents they're going to go off to Holden Village and volunteer for a substantial period of time instead of bringing in thousands of dollars, which would help with their school debts, their parents say, "You're crazy." And their parents are right. I mean, it's a totally understandable position. When they finished college and they want to come here for a period of time, they have this enormous debt. So it's a very serious complication of all lives. There are often time limits on those debts, they have to be paid. I think that our workplaces are slightly, I guess over the years I've come to think that our workplaces are slightly more flexible about various personal political issues than I once thought they were. And I think if we push harder against some of the institutions that we work for, they respond. They respond to pressure, they respond to concerned people with energy and good hearts who are not comfortable in a workplace that doesn't meet human needs. Flex time kinds of things have come about because a lot of people have pushed for them and asked for them. So I hope that more people will be doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was just thinking, a lot of that seems to come back to just what you said at the first about listing all the things that take your time and somehow knowing which of those are most important in our lives. And that what I have learned in being in business for myself is that there are many times where I can just say no, that this just doesn't work for me. And it's very well accepted by the people that I deal with, because it's obviously important to me to say, no, I just can't do this extra thing and this extra thing, that this time is important for me to just be by myself or with my family. And I'm not sure I realized that very well until I was in business for myself, or where I had some choices. I'm a nurse to be able to just say, well, I'm only going to work this many days a week, and that's just it. And people, somehow when you can be that open about what you can handle, people seem to accept that very well, at least people I know.
Well, that's an inspiring story.
Oh, good.
It's good to hear. The bell rang. I don't want to keep you from the next session. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your comments, and I'm more convinced than ever that life's very complicated. Thank you.
Thank you.